Hello, everybody, and welcome to our fourth episode of Educators Grow. I'm your host, John Wozniak. I'm an elementary principal in Oak Lawn, Illinois, and today we just had to go back to having two guests. Our first episode had two guests, and there you go. That's one of them that just cannot wait to introduce themselves. But we have two educators that I know from Florida that I've connected with on Twitter for a long time. I've been on Twitter for, I want to say, about 3 years. Did not do anything with it for about 6 months, but I feel as though I've known these two for quite a while. And we are happy to have them today. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over and we'll get some introductions. Whoever would like to go first, it's up to you guys.
Hey, me, yes. I am Nicole Taylor. I am an extraordinary network manager at Caldwell Elementary School in Central Florida, specifically Arbondale. I am a creative mastermind and very bold, authentic, and humble, I would say. And I have one of my BFFs that I teach with at my school.
Hey guys, I am Brandy Miller, and I am a first grade teacher at Caldwell Elementary. I am in my 11th year of teaching, all in first grade. And my little fun fact is that I get to teach at the same elementary school that I went to as a kid. So we are super excited to be here today with John, and we're ready to get this started.
Before we do get started though, I always love that fun fact that you share, Brandy. And a fun slash sad fact for me is my elementary school is no longer. My elementary school where I went closed down several years ago. So
that's so sad.
I know. And actually, so did my high school. My high school closed the same exact year. So it was a lot of sadness for 1 year of schooling for me, thinking about all that.
But, wow. Yeah, I don't ever heard of a school closing. What did they do with the buildings?
Let me think about that. The elementary school I went to turned into a public school. The public school system bought it out. And the high school I went to actually merged with an all-girls school. So they used the building for, I think, some of the PE classes and things of that nature. But for the building itself, I'm not really sure. But
okay.
But now that I have that sad fact out of the way, let's bring it back up.
Okay, only happy stuff from here on out, please. Okay, I only need happy stuff.
Agree completely. So my first question, I love this question. I love asking this question. I feel as though it kind of takes the entire podcast in a nutshell. Describe yourself in three words, your first year in education, and then describe yourself currently in three words or less, now in education.
Okay, so I will go first. When I think back to my first year of teaching, I believe I was excited. I'd always dreamed of being a teacher, and so finally getting to live out that, I was full of excitement. I was very naive, and so the ideas of what I thought teaching was from what I remember as a child wasn't quite what it was once I got into the field, and I felt that I was very isolated. I kind of tended to stay to myself and stay in my classroom and focused on what was going on in my classroom and wasn't fully aware of the people and the ideas that were out there waiting. So when I fast forward to 11 years in the field, I definitely believe that three words that describe me now would be passionate, trailblazer, and assertive. I kind of have found my voice. I've found my love, and I'm not afraid to take risks and try new things in my classroom.
Well, when I first started, we're not even going to talk about how long ago I started. That's just embarrassing. In our Voxer group, I found out I was the oldest. And I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, I'm the craziest of the Voxer group, but I'm the oldest. But I was, my three words, I would say I was naive, arrogant, and energetic. Extremely volatile. And then now, though, there's a lot of maturity that comes with the teaching year in and year out. And if you're moldable and if you go through those hard lessons and you learn from them, I would say my three words for me right now, I would call myself creative, bold, and humble. Are you writing those down, John?
I love to have little thoughts in my head though. So you both said naive in your first years of teaching. That's interesting.
Oh yeah. I think you're naive if you don't think you're naive. Definitely, that would just be the first indication. You know, your first year, you don't know. And there's a fun story with me and Brandy. the, what was it? It was the pre-planning back her first year.
First day.
And, first day of pre-planning. And I had known Brandy growing up sort of as a teenager. There's only, what, 15, about 15 years difference in us, maybe?
12, 15.
12, but it's my nephews, and she grew up around the town, so I knew her through high school and that sort of stuff. So excited to have her come to Caldwell. She walks into the media center midday, I don't know, she just starts crying. You go ahead and finish the story. I don't remember the whole thing.
I was gonna say, do you want her to tell this story?
No, it is. It's something we reference back and forth all the time. And I did. It just was this overwhelming feeling of not knowing what to do. Mm. What steps do I need to take? Here I am, my very first day, and not having a game planned in my mind what to do. And Nicole comes around the corner and she sees me crying and she grabs me by the hand and she takes me to go visit another teacher's classroom. And when we walk into this other teacher's classroom, we walk in and her room is completely set up. And I'm thinking, what is she doing here? What is she doing? Because this is not helping at all. And she goes, Brandy, she was you last year, because it was her second year of teaching. Everyone goes through it. It is a process, it is a journey, it is a learning experience. You will get to the point where you know what's going on, but you've got to go through that rough patch of figuring it out as you go.
I did. I remember telling her, you're going to be late for lunch. You will miss a special and they'll call you to pick up your kids. Just the biggest thing is make sure every kid gets home at the end of the first day. Okay, that's all you have to do. I said, you're going to mess up and you're going to be late. And it's okay because everybody here expects it, but they expect you to fix it, but don't freak out that first week. And so that's why I think everybody in their first year is naive, because how many of us walk in the first, our first year, first day of pre-planning, we got this empty classroom and we're like, oh snap, what now? College did not prepare me for this. So yeah, I think you're naive if you think you're not naive.
If you're not thinking you're naive, I like that. I also love how you guys just said reference, like, you know, it's a process and a journey. That's something that I did not realize at first either. I'm, if I'm being honest, and I think I said it in a previous episode, I looked at myself as kind of a finished product when I started. I looked at myself as, you know, this teacher that went in, and I knew what was going to happen. I knew what to expect, and you learn very quickly. That's not the case at all, right?
Yeah, very.
Yeah. Let's see. All right. So, what's the best lesson that you've learned from someone else? It does not have to be necessarily education related. It can be, but what's the best lesson you've learned from somebody else?
So my best lesson was really from my mother. She was an artist, extremely creative. So anything that you have walked into Michael's, Hobby Lobby, or a Joanne store and seen, that woman made gift baskets, flower baskets. She sewed, she made all of my prom dresses. She made my wedding dress. She made all the flowers for my wedding. That she could paint, she could do portraits. So she was just an extremely creative, crafty person. And that is sort of where I began. I realize now at my age, looking back, that she was actually teaching me sort of that innovator's mindset, because I just naturally have it. Anytime I would sit down and I wanted to make something with her, for example, let's say I wanted to make a bag. I love the Florida Gators. Mom, I want to make a Florida Gator purse. Okay, Nicole, but she would never make it for me because, good God, you know, I have to do it myself. She has to teach it to me. She was such a natural teacher. And so we would sit down and go through it. And inevitably, every time, I would cut something the wrong length. I would paint something the wrong color. I would screw something up and make a mistake. And what she really taught me was there are no mistakes. There are just opportunities to find a new solution or maybe a completely new product. She would sit back and we would look at it. She goes, well, you know what? We're not going to fit. Let's just put this to the side. We'll do something with that later. And then we'd start over. But we'd always come back and some complete new product or new idea would come out of that mistake. Because she, well, what if? And well, what if we did this? And well, oh, hey, we could take this and make that. And this bag, or now this new cover for something, you know, it was crazy how my mom's mind worked, that now I sort of have that I'm not scared of mistakes. I'm not scared of failure. I'm not scared of screwing something up. I actually slightly weirdly get excited when something messes up, because I go, oh, okay, this is uncomfortable, but I know if I just don't freak out and I give myself time to think about it. I always say this, I'll let it marinate. I always say that, like, just let it marinate for a while. And I tell you what, something always comes to me like, oh my God, I got this great idea, Brandy. And it's normally Brandy, we can do this. And she's like, oh my God, that's awesome. And I would have never thought of that if that mistake or that resource or something hadn't, you know, came in the way of my original plan.
All right. You kind of like detours and roadblocks.
Oh, I love detours and roadblocks, actually. That's the adventure in me, I guess.
There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
Okay, Brandy, what's your lesson?
Okay, so my big lesson kind of happened last year, and it's from my Twitter friend, Adam Welcome.
Adam, welcome.
There you go. Shout out for Adam.
Like a pirate.
Adam,
welcome.
So basically, I am a control freak. I have no problem admitting that I want to know what's going on and have my hand in everything. And I kept saying I wanted to try coding. But I didn't understand coding. And thinking back to Kids Deserve It and the chapter on put the bat in their hands, and after talking with Adam, he was basically like, I'm holding my kids back. My fear of not knowing every answer was preventing me from putting it into my kids' hands and letting them run with it.
Well, because it's not for you, Brandy. It's not always knowing the answer, but you not being able to control the outcome.
True. Very true. And so he kind of challenged me to go in and to hand it over to them and to give them the opportunity to teach me. And so I remember going the next day, putting the app on all my Kindles and handing it to my kids and saying, I want you to try this. I do not know how to do it, but I need you to figure it out so then you can teach me. And within 5 minutes, the kids were running up to me and going, look, Miss Miller, look at this. Look, I got it to talk. Look at it do circles. And it was this eye-opening experience of, oh my gosh, I have held my kids back. And it doesn't just with coding, it's with other things. Mm-hmm. And so that really has implanted in my mind and in my heart that it's not about me being in control. It's about my kids having these amazing opportunities, experiences, and running with it and not being fearful of not having all the answers, to just kind of that journey and that process of discovering along the way. And I think it's really empowered my students and really given them more control to take ownership of their learning.
Wow, that's a great lesson. And that's another lesson that if I reflect back, I wrote a blog post a few months ago about different lessons that I've learned as a teacher. And one of them was that I don't have to know everything. I remember the first ever time that I made a mistake in front of my class. I was a math teacher, and I made a math mistake in front of my class, and I turned red. Like, I should know everything, and I should be perfect at everything. And the reality is that we're not. And I think the other reality coming from your story is that our students know a lot, and our students sometimes know more than we think they do, and they sometimes know more than we do, and that's okay.
Absolutely.
Well, if you think about it, John, really, that's not the best approach for any of us to take, because who really wants to sit around and talk to a know-it-all?
I don't.
I know I don't either. I'd rather, like, hash things out and be able to give to the conversation and someone else give to me, and then, you know, you learn together, and I think that's a powerful role that the teachers need, especially now, because we're no longer the holders of all the information. Truly, the internet is. I mean, any book, any resource is at their fingertips that they want to learn. And it's a matter of us connecting them with that resource and becoming that lifelong, daily, minute-to-minute learner with them, helping them guide. And it's more about really teaching them what's a good resource to go to, because there are a lot of bad resources out there. Mm-hmm. There's websites and things they don't need to be going to. So we need to guide them along having, you know, the highway of all the information. We're no longer holders of the information. We're like tour guides on the internet now. Hey, that was great. Yeah.
That was a good one. That was a good one. I'll give you guys a high five on that one too, all right?
Tour guide. My internet tour guide is what I am.
Yeah. All right. I love this question too, and I'm very intrigued about hearing your thoughts on this one. So what's something, it could be education related or not, that right now you would love to learn more about?
What do I want to learn more about?
You want to think about it? Okay. So I'm going to take the lead on this one.
Yeah.
So I have dabbled into flexible seating in my classroom, but I am on this journey to wanting to revamp my whole classroom. And I'm wanting to really transform the learning space as I move into the next school year. And so after attending FETC back in January and kind of seeing some different options and sitting in on a couple of different sessions. That is something that I'm currently exploring and looking for things that I think will be best suited in my first grade classroom for next year, and transforming that learning space so that it's a cooperative learning environment, movable pieces, and that will really enhance the learning that's taking place in my classroom.
All right, so you're gonna love me, John. I'm just gonna lead right into question number three with my answer.
Go for it.
Question number three, for those who are listening, have to do with, like, if we wanna learn something new, how do we go about doing it? Well, Nicole Taylor here is remodeling a house. And this girl, I'm a network manager, but I'm more on the instructional side of technology and the end user and how to apply it. I'm not much about the hardware, as far as, you know, the network cords that go through your house. My husband seems to think I am. And so we had knocked all the walls out of this house, and we ran all the Cat 7, we went up the Cat 7 wire, that's network wire. We ran it through the house, all these ports. And now he's thinking he wants me to terminate these Cat 7 cables. I'm like, what the heck? I don't know how to do this, guy. He's like, yeah, you do, babe. Come on, come on. Yeah, you do. I'm like, I don't know how to do this. But you know what? I'm going to learn. I'll figure it out. So this is what I do to figure it out. I talk to my network guy at my school, not my school, but my county, my wiring guy. Mm-hmm. And his name's Brent. And I'm like, Brent, can you show me how to terminate a cable? He's like, sure. Takes me out to his van, and he's like showing me all the cables and the wires and the cross wires and the blue and what you have to do. I've watched probably 20 different videos. I've researched all the different network, and I'm currently working on terminating Cat 7 cables in my new house. Is that not crazy? But it goes back to the whole internet thing. We have so much information that's just sitting there waiting for us to use. And there's so many experts everywhere that's willing to share that information for free. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm using them. So I call around, I'll ask, I have read a few articles. Of course I read the manual. I say I'm the only person on my campus that reads manuals. Like, you know, when you get a printer, you take that printer out of the box and people say, hey, can you come fix this? And that's the first thing I say, do you have the manual? And they will look at me and go, what manual? I'm like, you know, the piece of paper that came with this piece of equipment? No. So I had to go look it up online, because guess what? All the manuals are where? On the internet highway. So again, as a tour guide of the internet, I go to the internet manual, the manual on the internet, and I read it, and then I learn how to do something. So that's how, right now, what am I learning to do? I'm learning to terminate Cat 7 cables in my house, which didn't really want to, but my husband asked me to, so I did, gladly, because I love him very much. So when I learn something new, I just jump on it. I read a lot, and I ask experts, but I watch a lot of videos, too, online. And then if I totally screw it up, that's when I'll call in the cavalry.
Well, do you need any help?
What?
Is there anything I can help you when it comes to the wiring of the house? Is there anything you need to ask me? Because if there is, I can't help you at all, just so you know.
Oh, really? Well, what's your background in that? And if you don't have a background, then I'm like, can't help you. No, thanks.
Well, I actually, the house that I'm in right now, we've lived here about 2 years. And I like to tell everybody that when they ask you, oh, what are some things that you've done with the house? I rewired the entire house with all new electrical wire, because my father's an electrician. And you know, I helped him, but really it was just me bringing him wires and wire cutters and everything like that. So I leave that part out, try to make it seem like I know what I'm doing, but I have no idea at all. So good luck with everything with that, though.
I appreciate that. But I think we live in a wonderful age right now where there's so much information that is available to us that, you know, there's nothing that we really can do. And that's also scary. That's also a very scary part, because that leads me into a conversation we have with our kids a lot about tools. And, you know, everything in life, we talk about coding, because coding is a tool. But if you put coding in the hands of a good person, it can be a good thing. But you put coding in the hands of a bad person, and they turn that tech tool into a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And so in anything in life, you know, having all this information at our resources for good people who have a good heart is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But imagine it. All that information falling into, as we see in our life, and
the wrong hands,
it turns into a bad thing. Oh my God, I just went to a sad place. Forget it.
I thought we promised we were not going to do that anymore.
Oh, sorry, I take it back. Can you cut that out?
Nope, I can't. Sorry, it's in there. We'll just move on from it, okay? We've agreed that we will not do it again. We all get one mistake. That's okay. Mistakes are okay. Mistakes are all right. We're going to learn from it, right?
Yes, we are.
So Nicole, you kind of covered question number four, but if there's anything you want to add, or Brandy, if there's anything you want to add, I know you mentioned some conferences that you went to, but basically, what are some ways that you go about learning something new? If when there's that idea in your head, what are some ways that you go about learning more about it?
So when I have a new idea or come across a topic that piques my interest, I'm going to do my research. I'm going to go to my thinking partners and my people and kind of get their opinions if they've dabbled in it. Nicole is my thinking partner. Whenever I come up with a new idea, I run to her because she's going to help let me make it happen. But it's looking for those resources that are out there, doing my research. And then I'm one that's going to jump in and go with it.
If it makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, we're not doing it.
But
she'll be honest. I feel like she'll be honest with you.
It's crazy and fun. We're all in.
Yeah. So it just is, it's relying on my network of people that I trust and kind of looking for resources that will help me on that journey to make it a reality.
Yeah, Brandy's really big on having her resources vetted. I'm not so much. I mean, I'll just go with it. I'm more of it. This is like a partnership. She's like safe, you know, she's just the safe one. You know, everybody has to be vetted. She has to know their background and trust them completely. But me, I'll just kind of fly by the seat of my pants and squeal while I'm going, me.
You two remind me of the last year that I was in a classroom. I was teaching fifth grade, and I had a fifth grade teaching partner who was very much like Brandy. And I would say I'm more like Nicole. I would come in every morning, hey, you want to try something? And she's like, tell me about it. I'm like, all right, you have 5 minutes. I tell her all about it. And she's like, when do you want to try it? I'm like, let's try it in 10 minutes with the kids when they come in.
Yeah, let's do it.
What?
No.
Yes, it's fine. It's okay. What's the worst going to happen? Right? And, you know, sometimes it bombs. You know, I'm not going to lie. Not every idea was a super idea. You know, of course, it bombs sometimes. But I think that's a wonderful way to balance that out, though. And I know that you guys do that.
We're good. We really are good balancing partners, because where I'm weak, she is very strong. And she knows that. I rely on her a lot because with all the crazy going around in my head, sometimes it doesn't. My calendar, she's like my walking calendar. And I tell you what, I don't think Brandy's the one that keeps me on track. And okay, you can be over here at 4:45. Yeah, I'm coming. Hey, this is happening in 2 days. You know, girls next week. Have we planned anything? Oh shoot, we need to think that. Don't, you know, but I'm much like you. I can throw it together. Some of the best things come together under pressure and crazy ideas, you know, but she's extremely, extremely, extremely organized. I mean, it's like scary organized.
One of the things that I am bad at is kind of something you referenced a second ago. When I sit there and I think about something for too long, then I'll start doubting it. Whereas if I try it right away, then I'm glad that I tried it and I'll start seeing the things that didn't work. But I'm much more confident if I just try something right away rather than sit on an idea, stewing on it, and then start doubting what, you know, and questioning things like that. That's definitely a fault of mine.
Oh, that's not a good fault. Stay away from sad things, John.
You're right. No, I was just telling you what might happen. I wasn't sharing a sad story, though. Additionally, before we move on to our final question, one of the things that I was thinking of when you were talking about how, you know, you search on it, I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were talking, you know, what's the number one search site? And everybody says Google, which is true. And the second one is YouTube. And I feel like that's such a powerful tool. I feel like our students probably go to that one a lot of times, even more so the first time. So when I was looking at how to do some online chats and things of that, I Googled it. I YouTubed it. And it was so interesting to me because so many YouTube videos with technology in them has students. Like, I think the one that I was watching was a 12-year-old student. And I just found that so interesting. And it really made me think about our school.
I watched a video with like a kid terminating a Catch 7 cable. I'm like, oh my God, are you serious? I'm not kidding you. I didn't see him, but you could see his little hands and voice. I'm like, oh, I feel like a dummy right now. But I agree. I mean, and because of privacy, and there's, you know, I'm more on the technology side of my school. There's just so many districts, and our district blocks YouTube because there's, again, there it's such a wide variety. It has amazing resources for teachers, but we can't let our kids loose on it because where they want to go really isn't focused on educational. It's focused on the entertainment aspect of things. And, but, you know, I agree, YouTube isn't a wonderful educational tool. It's because everyday people get to share their masterpieces and what they're good at and what they know. And we don't have to go pay a college. We don't have to go to Hobby Lobby and pay a $25 class to sit through for 3 hours. We can just watch a few things online. And the human mind learns best by just doing. Then you go get the stuff, you try it, it screws up, you watch a couple more videos and you try it again. And that's how everybody grows. My husband is making concrete countertops for our new house, all because he wanted concrete countertops. So instead of paying somebody to do it, well, he's an engineer, so he's pretty bright. But he watched a lot of YouTube videos on it. You know what, the pros and the cons, and did a couple kind of fake little concrete countertops. But YouTube is a valuable resource for, adults and children.
Gosh, I was with my friend, this was a few years ago, and he had a flat tire. We couldn't change his tire. We were pulling it off. We took the lug nuts off. We were pulling it off. We had to YouTube it. Even something like that, we YouTubed it, and I guess you hit it with a wrench and it came right off. And the person that made the video was maybe not an elementary school, but it was definitely like student age, maybe high school. So, you know, you get a lot of that information from them. So, and I felt kind of goofy, but it was a wonderful learning experience. Now I know.
It's not goofy, because before you didn't know how to do it, and that was a big mm-hmm. deal.
And now I do know. And I've actually used that since. Somebody couldn't get their tire on, I asked them if they did that, and they did, and it worked. So there you go. Not only did I learn, but now I'm spreading that knowledge elsewhere.
There you go, John.
Changing the world.
That's how we grow. Did you hit them with a wrench?
There you go. When in doubt. So last question I have for the two of you. If you had one wish for schools, no matter how creative or how crazy it may sound, and with no monetary restrictions, what would it be?
Okay, so Brainy's wanting me to answer this one for you.
All right.
She just pointed at me. She goes, this one's you. I was like, okay. So if I could really change anything right now in our profession, it would be that the educators, you and I, and all of us that are in this profession would stop trashing our profession. That we would step up and be beacons of light of the amazing things that our profession is, so that we could draw more people in. Because right now there's such attrition in our profession as educators, and who wants to come to a profession that all the teachers do is whine, complain. I could use some other words, but they certainly don't sit there and really talk about the daily joys. Yes, every job's bad, but overall, stereotypically, educators get a bad rap because educators give each other a bad rap, or they give themselves a bad rap. They don't go home and talk up their job. They talk down their job. Mm-hmm. And if we could do that, we could draw more quality educators into our profession. And that's how we're really going to start changing our educational system. Right now is quality educators, because I don't care how much money, how many resources, what you throw at a school, if you don't have quality educators in the room to use them, they're just going to sit in a closet. They're going to sit in a room and not be used. And I really would like to see us stop whining and complaining on social media and other thing, and start really uplifting our profession to get more quality people in here. But the second thing, and it's mainly because right now my school's really affected by the laws that Florida, you know, every state has different laws that they put forth, even different school systems. I've been on Twitter and I've learned private schools, you know, like that all-girls school, boarding schools. Every school has a governing body of some sort. I would really love for the lawmakers who are making the laws be mandated to walk their schools on a weekly basis. They have to clock in hours of being at their schools, in their classrooms, walking and talking to the principals, the custodians, and the teachers. That's the only way, because they are sitting up in, for us, it's Tallahassee, our capital, mm-hmm. and they're striking rules and laws and they're putting them in force, but they don't know the names of the people behind the stories that they're affecting and the hardships that it's causing, that they think they're creating a solution when in turn you're creating something bigger and harder. Yeah. You know, you feel like, and I know I did it right for you, you feel like, you know, in the Bible, when Moses is trying to let the people go, when Pharaoh gets mad at him, he's like, no, now I'm going to take the straw from you and you have to make your own straw and mud to make your own hay. You know, I feel like that's what the lawmakers are doing to us. Now they're just taking our straw and everything else. You're like, what? You're not even going to give me the straw to make my bricks. Now I have to go cut my straw. It's just crazy what some of the lawmakers are doing. You know, when Betsy DeVos was in that 60-minute interview, and come to find out, she hadn't been in any of her schools. And it's just, it's a sad case that you have a governing body making laws that are affecting human beings, and they're not walking those halls.
Yeah, it's important for us, you know, even myself as a principal, it's important for me to, you know, be in the classrooms. You know, if I want to know what's going on in the school, I have to be around the school. I can't be in my office. And if people want to know what's going on in schools, come on in, you know, see what's happening. Because, you know, we're not talking about numbers or anything. We're talking about teachers. We're talking about students. You got to put, you know, those names in the faces to what's actually going on.
Hey, John, we have a question for you.
Uh-oh, I've never done this before. This is an Educators Grow first, but okay, shoot it my way.
Are you serious for you? So it is stereotypical that there is a administration and teachers, typically there's a strain, you know, a divide, a them versus us mentality on some school campuses. And we being teachers feel it's very important that administrations and teachers have a collaborative and working relationship together. The only thing that teachers really truly have control of is ourselves. So our question is,
as a principal, what advice can you give to teachers to help strengthen their relationships with their administration?
I feel like this is something that I've said with just every position is, if there's a question you have, ask it. And I know that that's sometimes difficult because when I was a first year teacher, I was very difficult for me to ask questions because I didn't want to look like I didn't know what was going on. I didn't want to look weak or anything like that. But I would much rather have somebody come to me and ask me a question rather than just the try until you fake it mentality. And I feel that same way with principal and teacher relationships. I feel that same way with the teacher-teacher relationship. I feel that same way with the teacher-to-student relationship. So I guess my advice would be just know that your principal is a resource for you. And if there's anything that you need from them, whether it's a question about classroom management, whether it's a question about supplies for your classroom, whether it's a question about a disciplinary thing, if you have a question, feel free to ask him or her about something along that nature and know that they're there to help you, not necessarily there to just try to, you know, catch you when something goes wrong or anything like that.
That's an excellent answer. Thank you.
And at the same time, I have to say, you know, coming from the administrative point of view, I have to remember that that's part of my job too. My job is not here to, you know, catch people when they're doing something wrong or to just look at, like, just for the purpose of evaluation. My job is to make sure that my teachers are successful and to do whatever I can to make sure they're successful because they're the ones that are in the classroom. I'm in the classroom visiting, but the teachers are the ones doing that classroom work, the instruction, forming those relationships. I form relationships my own way, but the classroom teachers are really what makes the school shine. So my job is to just make sure that they're in the best possible place to make sure that they're doing that.
That's excellent. You sound like a well-balanced principal.
Well, thank you. I just want everybody to know that I gave them the questions ahead of time, and that question was just put on me rather than there.
What?
Hey, just being honest. You just have to be honest with everybody.
Because you would lie to me if otherwise, John. That's just like the little thing that I have. Whenever someone says, well, if I'm going to be honest, I always come back and say, because otherwise you would lie to me.
All right, I'll just leave it there. No, I wouldn't lie. I wouldn't lie, but no, just know that.
Good answer, John.
Well, I just want to thank both of you, part of my Wonder Crew. We have a wonderful Voxer group that you two are part of. Just want everybody to know that. Learn from each other all the time, and I just think it's incredible to connect with you two. It's incredible to connect with other people in our group. It's incredible to connect on Twitter. Learn so much from all of you guys, and I just want to thank you for taking some of your time to join me and discuss some of these questions and just be honest and open and sharing some fantastic answers.
Well, John, we just want to thank you for this opportunity. We love connecting and learning with you and are excited about this podcast and this journey that you're on.
Well, thank you. And everybody, thank you very much for listening to our fourth episode of Educators Grow, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.